You are listening to the Streets MN Podcast, a place where conversations about Minnesota's transportation and land use are expanded through research and informed commentary.
Hello and welcome to the Streets.MN Podcast. My name is Bill Indicke, and I'm coming to you from the west side of St. Paul with episode 117, St. Paul's Ward 4 with Mitra Jalali Nelson. This is another in my series of interviews with political candidates for local public office. Longtime listeners of this podcast will remember, for example, 5 years ago when I interviewed people running for Minneapolis and St. Paul City Council during that busy election season. I've also interviewed people running for city council or mayor in places like West St. Paul, Columbia Heights, Newport, and other places. The goal of this kind of election coverage is to talk to folks who aren't running for high-profile offices, but rather who are running in down-ticket elections, people who might not get a lot of attention or chances to talk about their campaigns or platforms in the mainstream press, mostly because there isn't a mainstream press for city council races for the most part. So that's the idea behind doing it. And today's candidate is Mitra Jalali Nelson. She is running for city council in St. Paul during a special election that is taking place this summer in Ward 4. This part of the city is sort of the northwestern corner of St. Paul. Areas like Hamlin Midway, St. Anthony Park, or Union Park, and other few neighborhoods. With the August 15th special election rapidly approaching, I asked Mitra to sit down at the Workhorse Coffee Shop on University Avenue and chat about her background, her platform, and how her campaign's going. Our conversation ranged all over the place, and it was not hard to get Mitra to talk about her ideas for St. Paul and for what city council members can do to improve people's lives. We talked about specific transportation and housing ideas to the whole big picture of city politics in the age of Trump and how best to do engagement with folks. So I hope you enjoy the conversation. Before we get to the main part of the podcast, though, I want to pause and let you know that this podcast is sponsored by me. In fact, my name, as you know, is Bill Indicke, and in addition to hosting this podcast, I am a freelance writer. And so conveniently for this podcast, I've written a short guide booklet that details some of the history of parks in St. Paul's Ward 4. It's called Overlook Parks of St. Paul, and it's about sort of small and obscure parks that you might not know about within Ward 4 of St. Paul. It's one of many different booklets that I've written over the years that serve as guides to different historical places, small-scale establishments, or urban curiosities in the Twin Cities. You can get them online, including the Overlooked Parks of St. Paul booklet, at my store, which is tcsidewalks.bigcartel.com. They're affordable and fun, and they make great gifts. I'll put one in the mail for you, so check out my booklets at tcsidewalks.bigcartel.com. And with that, let's get on to the conversation. Welcome to the Streets of Men podcast. I'm here with you, Mitra Jalali Nelson.
Thank you. Hello.
Hello. And I want to begin by saying that you also have hosted a podcast. Do you want to mention that or not?
Sure. Yeah. I did used to do a podcast back in the day. I'm a huge Marvel Comics fan, and I co-hosted a show about... it was a TV show called Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and it was also about all the different Marvel movies that exist and kind of more about diversity and representation in media and kind of in fandom and geekdom. So you might know me from Beyond the S.H.I.E.L.D., a podcast that also comically was recorded in Ward 4, as it were. So if you want to check that out, feel free. But I'm here today in a very different capacity.
Yeah, I just wanted to make it clear that you are our podcast expert,
yes,
and veteran.
I am a homegrown podcaster. That's correct. Thanks.
But yeah, well, today we're talking to you. I'm talking to you because you're running for city council in St. Paul here in Ward 4. I didn't tell you I was going to ask you this, but where is Ward 4? What are the boundaries of Ward 4?
Sure. So, I'll talk about it in terms of neighborhoods because I think that usually that helps people place it. So Ward 4 encompasses, I say there's a lot of parks, right? We have St. Anthony Park, Marion Park, Union Park, Como Park. We have the heart of Hamlin Midway. And then it's basically like the upper left corner of the city, if you will. So just past kind of the 280 boundary, we have the edge of the ward there. Goes up north as far as Hoyt. Down the right side of the ward is Lexington Parkway, then to Snelling, and then to Pryor for some of it. And then it just dips a teeny little bit into Mack Groveland. So it's that whole chunk of the city. A diverse range of neighborhoods, lots of different, kind of like a slice of our city, if you will. Lots of different kinds of people living across the ward. So that's the area I'm running to represent.
Cool. And it's one of the seven seats in St. Paul, and this is a special election also.
Yep.
So it's not the regular election. It's because the incumbent council member, Russ Stark.
Yep.
Former council member, Russ Stark.
Yep. And former council president and fearless hero of Ward 4. Yep. Has gone on to work really hard at the city with Mayor Carter as our chief resilience officer. So heading up a lot of climate and transit and sustainable energy work our city really needs right now. So
yeah, this is a sort of special election, and it's called a special election, and it's happening on August 15th.
August 14th.
August 14th. That's important. That detail matters.
It's the same day as the primary. So on August 14th, we will have folks at the polls for, there's just so many things at stake, right? We have our governor's race. We have our statewide races of attorney general, auditor, actually, U.S. Senate,
auditors.
Yes.
Actually.
Yes.
Don't forget that.
I think people forget about a lot of these really important up ballot races that are happening that haven't typically been as focused on. And so in Ward 4, the same day as the primary, we're going to have a special election to choose our next city council person. So I am running to be that new progressive voice for our ward. I would really love to be a bridge between who our ward has been, who we're becoming, and really be a leader for the future of our city. And so I can talk more about that, of course, and what that looks like to me. But it's a very important day for our ward and for our city. City councilors make decisions on a whole range of issues that do impact people beyond ward borders. So that's what's going on August 14th. Yep.
August 14th.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be... Whoever wins would be in office for a little over a year and then run again.
Right. So it's a special election because we are filling former Councilmember Stark's seat. Councilwoman Samantha Henningsen, who is one of the unsung heroes of our ward, right, and Councilmember Stark's longtime aide and now current councilwoman, is serving as the interim. And on August 14, we'll choose someone to finish the rest of that seat's term. And then in 2019, this seat, along with all the rest of the council, will be up for a full term. So I plan to hopefully succeed in this election, and then I would want to run again for a full term. So
cool.
That's the situation.
Can you tell me, for someone who hasn't followed the race much or at all and doesn't know who you are, who are you? Like, why are you running for this office?
Sure. So, I'm Mitra Jalali Nelson. I am a proud daughter of immigrants. I'm a lifelong Minnesotan. I was born and raised in our community. I am a former classroom teacher of 3 years, turned organizer. I have fought for school funding. I fought for more resources for kids and families. And I'm also currently a policy and outreach aide to Congressman Keith Ellison. That's my day job. And I basically work at the intersection of constituent services and policy to really take on the issues that are affecting our constituents. And I am also running to be our next council candidate, our next council rep for Ward 4, because I really believe we are at just such a pivotal moment in our city. We are the fastest growing city in the 7-county metro. We were last year. We have a lot to do to catch up to the growth that our city's experiencing. I think this growth is an opportunity. I'm excited about it. I'm running to reflect that growth. And I also think we need to really take on some of the central challenges that are playing out in our ward that I think are a microcosm for what the city is facing. I'm running as a renter in a city where 50%, more than 50%, just past the 50% mark of our city are renting in an array of situations. And we have yet to have any renter voice on the council, something I'd really like to bring to start to balance that out and that representation. And we also have about 20,000 new units of housing. Sorry, 20,000 new people in our city. I apologize. But just about 4,000 units have been created to support those people. So I'm really running with an eye on addressing our affordable housing shortage. I would really love to be a voice for half of our city right now that's renting and seeing their rents rise. I would really love to be a voice for a rising generation of St. Paulites who want to transition to attainable homeownership and are having an impossible time. and a voice for a lot of folks in my ward who are aging and want to move out of their homes that they've lived in for a really long time. And they need different kinds of living situations, too, to create more space for them. So it's really about this idea of a ward where everyone can make it, a city where everyone can make it, and progress that's going to bring all of us with it. Those are some of the things I love to work on.
Cool. There's a lot in there I want to get to. But first, maybe can you talk a little bit about your work with Congressman Ellison?
Sure.
Like,
so
what have you been doing with him?
Yep. So for the past 2 years, I've worked with Congressman Ellison. I'm really proud to be one of our district staffers. And I'm part of an outreach team of people whose job is essentially to regularly be in community with constituents and understand what are the issues that are bubbling up and how are federal policies playing out, and also working with state and local entities of government, so actually working closely with the city, working closely with the county, to really figure out how we can best have an impact on people's lives. There's a lot of everyday constituent services that's a part of my job, supporting people with casework, fielding calls, fielding questions to the office, serving as a government connector. I work specifically in the areas of immigration and refugee issues. So the last 2 years have been quite a nightmare, frankly, for a lot of immigration issues, as I think we've seen in the news. There's just particularly vulnerable populations of people that we're seeing going through unthinkable things. And it has really been a moment for me of reflection on what kind of leadership is needed at the local level to not only fight back against some of the heinous things that we're seeing happen just in our nation and in the fabric of our society, but also to really boldly set forth a different, just a different agenda, just a different set of values, just taking those all our welcome signs that are everywhere across our ward and our city and making sure that that sign is true for everyone, that we are really working to have inclusive government that reflects who our city is, that we are working to break down the barrier between residents and government. A lot of times I hear from folks when I talk to them that it's not clear how they can make their voice heard at the city level. And I think my background in organizing is all about translating people's voices into policy and into actual concrete gains through the government. So I've been doing that work the past couple of years with an eye on how can we create better systems for people at the local level, because I think what we're seeing is that's really where change is at right now. So I'm excited to bring that background to hopefully serve everyone in our ward as effectively as I can.
Yeah, after the 2016 election, I started to think a little bit more closely about the relationship between national politics and what's happening around things like immigration and local politics that I've been invested in and caring about for a long time. And I know a lot about, like, I read the national headlines, but that stuff's pretty far away, but it's coming, it meets people's real lives in the context of local politics, right?
Right.
So, well, how does that fit? So if you've been working on, like, big picture immigration policy, federal government stuff, and now you're thinking about things and what can the city like St. Paul do, just talk to me about that relationship a little
bit. So I think there's two ways that it's helpful right now for our city. The first is that I think that my daily work entails understanding what every level of government can and cannot do. And that is something that I think, because we've been through so much crisis in the past couple of years as a country, people have really been forced to understand what every level of government has jurisdiction over and what their actual role is and how they can make an impact. And I think having that intergovernmental view in an environment where, you know, we have a lot of challenges at the state, at the county, at these other local levels, and being able to understand government as a team sport and how to work effectively across those levels is actually something that would be really, I think, helpful for people in our community right now who have a wide set of needs and a wide set of, we have a very civically engaged ward, we have the highest voter turnout ward, and I think someone who's really willing to, like, embody that spirit of civic engagement and understand kind of going outside the bounds of your role to be an advocate is important for our ward and helpful for our city and in tune with kind of who we are as a ward. The second is that I think that operating as a current policy aide, I have worked to translate community input into actionable things the government can do to help people for basically 2 to 3 years now. And I think what happens a lot of the time is folks working in policy aren't necessarily living the issues, and then folks on the outside of government who are living the issues have less of an inroad into how to like create policy that changes it, right? And I am trying to bridge that gap. I think that right now what is really, really, really needed and could be really valuable for our city is a person who is looking to break down that barrier, essentially take community engagement and turn it inside out the way it's traditionally been. A lot of times we, you know, I see a lot of political culture of we'll wait for community input to come to us. And I think that what is needed in our city right now and what we're moving toward as a community is proactively seeking input to really hear from everybody, to really reach folks who are not in the district council system, for example, you know, aren't typically sought out because maybe they aren't viewed as politically active because they rent or because they're newer to America or for whatever reason. There's a lot of different ways that we sort of make assumptions about who is part of our democracy and who's not. And so for me, I think coming with that focus and bringing that to city government is something that our community could benefit from a lot. I'm hoping to listen as much as I am willing to share my opinion. I think that's just something really, really desperately important in everything we do, is to truly hear everyone out, be willing to, in disagreements, be persistent. That's something that I'm hoping to bring to the council. And just the work that I've done is, I think, it has helped develop that approach in me. It's something I value and something I hope to keep doing.
Yeah, what you're describing is a way that I think a lot of St. Paul systems are set up, where it's complaint-based or I don't know, the way that meetings are set up, the way that open houses operate. It's people who have a lot of already existing investment or a power or voice. Their voice is already like articulated. They're the ones who work within the system, and the system works around them. And that's not always equitable.
Well, and I'd like to open that up, right? So I think, you know, I have an entire essay on district council improvements that I'd like to see that I can certainly share with you after this. But, you know, I've written about this before, and one of the, you know, general sets of recommendations that I would love to see is if district councils are meant to be organizing bodies that get community input, then we should fund the cultural and emotional and social labor that organizing fundamentally entails. We should make sure that those boards are representative, right? A lot of times there's just very little representation for people of color, very little representation for renters, for younger people, for people who are, you know, roughly in my generation. I'm 32 years old and I am young by political standards. And I think that a lot of times our voice is missing from a lot of community dialogues, even though it's not for lack of opinions. It's that I think that you have to really just be willing to seek out people's perspectives. And that takes work, you know. There are district councils really working mightily to do that. And I have gotten to know lots of great people who are just avidly, you know, very game to do the work and already are and just need kind of more resources. So I would like to see some improvements to existing systems we have so that people doing that work can continue to do even better. And I think that viewing the role of the council as something that itself has convening power to create political space for issues that don't really have a lot of other places to have people talk about it, you know, being willing to convene a town hall on renters' rights, being willing to talk about tenant issues, being willing to have different listening sessions with groups of homeowners across the district on, you know, what they see as issues impacting them. And also just, you know, all kinds of residents in general, just going to places where I think traditionally people just haven't felt as heard is really important. And the way you do that is you just get out of the office and you view the community as your office and you're there as much as you can be. So mm-hmm. I hope that helps kind of get it.
Yeah.
That's just like that's how I've been thinking about it and what I'm trying to embody. I think the way you campaign reflects the way you govern, and we have gone to every corner of the ward I can think of. We're going to keep working hard between now and August 14. But I really care a lot about bringing new voices to the table and trying to help make sure that everyone can be heard.
So we're sort of sitting in a interesting spot to have this conversation at the Workhorse Coffee Shop, but it's at the corner of University Avenue and Raymond Avenue, right at one of the Green Line stop that's in Ward 4. I guess
yep.
Maybe Fairview is here in Ward 4 too.
Yep.
But, anyway, it doesn't matter. But this is where a lot of the change in development and apartments have been built in St. Paul along the Green Line, and it's an interesting spot. I'm curious what your take is on the housing do you see it as a crisis? Do you see a housing affordability problem?
Mm-hmm.
Do you see development as something that's challenging people in different ways?
And yeah.
What's your philosophy about how housing should be handled from the city perspective?
Yeah, well, so, and I'm happy to also, I would love to, first of all, refer people to, we do have a housing plan we're really proud of and we worked on a lot, and it's at www.mitranelson.com, and it really lays out kind of housing philosophy and vision for my campaign and what I really would love to see. But what I will say is, you know, where we're talking right now, essentially in my neighborhood, not very far away from where I live, I do live and rent along the Green Line. I do get to live where I live because of big investments our community has made in transit, big investments our community has made in growing the variation and type of housing that exists. And I love where I live. And I also look around and I see just an explosion of development across our major transit corridors and in places that do need to, you know, be able to be connected to transit and be able to connect it to existing neighborhoods. And what I guess I hear from the ward when I talk to folks is people would like to see development distributed across the city evenly, and that it makes sense to connect it to transit, but also lots of times there's neighborhoods where other folks would like to live too, and if we can create more units, more places for people to live, and if we're willing to sort of grow the number of units we have in existing ways across the city, that it builds on what's happening around here, if that makes sense, and it also helps kind of balance it across the ward and across the community. So I would really like to see us grow our density. I think we need to do that thoughtfully and make sure that we're doing it in tune with community needs, but that staying still is not a neutral choice. I think that when we forestall on development that makes sense, when we ask for costly years and years and years of processes to create something that, you know, people needed 10 years ago, what we're doing is we're falling behind. And so I feel very passionate about working to address what I see as a housing shortage across our city. I've talked a lot about, you know, more places for people to be renting, but when I talk to folks, you know, in neighborhoods who just moved in, there's a lot of younger families who have finally, you know, made their way to Como Park or made their way to Midway or other parts of the neighborhood, and they've shared with me just how impossible it was to buy. Like the housing market is just so intense right now for people my age. There's kind of, I alluded to this earlier, but there's a whole generation of people who are having an impossible time finding a place to lay down roots in our city. And I see that as a sustainability issue for kind of the future health of our community, right? If we aren't able to have a new generation of families that are able to be, you know, sending their kids to St. Paul Public Schools and being able to contribute to the tax base and, like, be a part of the circle of life of housing and, you know, growth and change that is natural for a community, we're not going to be able to sustain our future. And this is why I talk about wanting to be a leader for the future of the city, is that I think we need to think kind of 20, 30, 40 years ahead. And there's people making decisions about that phase of their life right now who are being faced with some pretty impossible choices. You know, as an example, I door knocked a family in Como neighborhood, and a young woman came to the door, and she seemed like she was maybe, give or take my age, within 5 years, right? And she has balancing a young baby on her arm, and I talked to her about a few things, and then I asked her, you know, how long have you lived in the neighborhood? And she said, oh, you know, we just moved in maybe a year and a half ago. And I said, could you tell me about what it was like to, you know, get your house? And she said, it was just basically impossible. We barely got our house. It went like that. In the same neighborhood, door knocking, a senior elderly person who said, I went for a walk one day. There was a for sale sign on the house across the street. I came back. The sign was gone. You know, they already took the house. So it's just so tight right now. You know, we're talking about thousands and thousands of dollars to buy hundreds of thousands of dollars to buy us a home. It's just really hard. You know, I think it's a problem because I think that if we really care about homeowners and being able to keep our property tax base really solid and have the amount of revenues we need as a city to make it, we just need to be thinking about how is the next generation of folks going to be able to afford a home. It's a problem because it reflects growing wealth inequality in our country, right? It's a problem because it means that it is tougher overall for everyone else to make it here. And I think we do a good job as a city of really wanting to work on these issues and be engaged on them. And I am running to just take that goodwill and take that potential and turn it into reality and actually start to solve some of these problems. I think I'm running because I'm living these issues, like myself personally. I am that woman in 2 to 5 years, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to be renting longer because I'm representing a generation that has rented for longer and longer because we've just had a different experience in the economy. We have more student debt. We have more pressures on us. You know, there's people that work on my team who are young women of color who support their parents and their siblings, right? There's working families, often more diverse, from a whole range of backgrounds, who just have more economic pressures on them and are really grappling with our failure to really work for a fair economy. And so to me, it's just so important to sustain our opportunity and our wealth as a community through helping people have places to live. It's just the number one factor in most people's budget, right? It's just the cost of a roof over your head. I just think you cannot create a city with equal opportunity without taking on housing policy in a fair way.
Do you mind really quickly talking a little about some specific policies that were in your document, like inclusionary zoning or renters' rights policies the city might be able to enact?
Sure. There's so many. So I do think that it's appropriate in certain cases to use inclusionary zoning as a tool to try to ask for more affordable units and at like a deeper level of affordability. So inclusionary zoning basically saying, you know, we need to have a certain set of units be dedicated at this affordable rate for this project to happen. I think it's a tool that you use among many tools, right, to try to get more affordable units out of what's being created. I think one of the things that I think about a lot with respect to protections for renters is that there's a lot of legalized discrimination that happens against tenants right now in a way that doesn't look on its face like overt discrimination, but actually is. So our city doesn't have an ordinance in place to make Section 8 voucher holders a protected class. Like there's no ordinance that says you can't deny someone housing on the basis of being a Section 8 voucher holder. So those voucher holders are often pushed out all the time in a way that is permitted because we haven't created a specific protection against it. In Minneapolis, they did pass such an ordinance, and now landlords are suing to try to, you know, overturn the ordinance. And so clearly that reflects a tension and a conversation that we need to be willing to have, I think, if we're going to be an equitable community in our city. I think that you shouldn't be criminalized for being a person that lives in poverty. And that's what a lot of housing policy actually somewhat does. It just penalizes folks who don't have as much access to wealth or capital. So I would also really love to, there's a way to grow the number of units in a lot of small scale ways. So people talk about kind of building our way out of this problem. And I am, you know, for responsible, thoughtful development. I think that we should be willing to do that to create more places for people to live, but a lot of times folks think of that as just big apartment buildings, right? Like just building more large scale places that, you know, I live in such a place. I like having a mix of places to see and be around. I'm excited about more neighbors, but we do have the ability to change our zoning code to help make more use of existing plots of land that we have, right? If our land is one of the most limited resources that we have and we can help more people in a square area be comfortably, affordably housed by each other, I think that we should find a way to do that. We should, you know, look at upzoning areas of our city so that we can have things like duplexes and triplexes, places whereas one family used to be there, now we could have four. We could have people in different stages of life living kind of with each other. So, for example, there's a lot of interesting like match programs that I've been looking at where to get at this issue of younger renters or people that aren't owning homes to also be living alongside and working with seniors. There's a lot of seniors sort of like in St. Anthony Park, for instance, which is which is a big part of our ward. There's older folks who want to sell their home because their property taxes are becoming high toward the end of retirement, but it's tough to just go ahead and sell it right away. So what they can do is they can essentially be matched with someone who is looking to move toward the neighborhood or needs a place to stay, and they can basically start to make the transition through renting out their room to somebody and finding ways to do that. There's just a lot of ways I think that we could meet intergenerational needs and start to make more places for people to live at a more range of levels that they can live at. So those are just some of the ideas I have. I again, really think that that I could talk to you about this for 2 hours.
Yeah, but those are three concrete ideas.
So,
but I
really, like, we have an entire plan that has tons of things that I would love to do. I'm also just wide open and listening to people on what they would love to do. This is the thing that I am the most obsessed with right now at this point in my life. It's a thing that I am living that I want to work on and bring to the council. It's just this energy, this appetite to really work on our housing shortage and to do that in a way that's in tune with, like, the needs of everyone in our community. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm.
Cool. That was a great answer. And some real specific ideas. Talk to me about transportation, which is the other big focus for Streets MN listeners, I think. And it's connected. Clearly, the Green Line, for example, has helped foster new housing development. And what can the city do to change its streets or its transit?
Yeah.
Or how people get around?
Yeah. So we do have a great streets plan up on our website. I'm just going to keep referring people to plans because while I have you, I want people to know that we spend a lot of time thinking about this and we do have ideas. But, you know, I think a lot about at a meta level, right? The idea of placemaking and how a lot of times our thoroughfares are really designed around cars as the primary user and how that has consequence for the experience people have in our communities. I would love to be able to balance that out toward a mix of users of the roads in a safe way. So there's a lot of bike infrastructure work that needs to be done around the city, for example. We're in talks to figure out who our bike share providers going to be. More ways for people to be able to walk, ride. I made this joke the other week, like, too soon maybe, but scoot around the city, right, to be able to be able to get around in ways beyond traditional automobiles, that type of thing.
You have to go back and talk a little bit about your scooter philosophy.
My scooter philosophy.
Have you been on one?
I haven't gotten to ride one yet. I do. It seems like when they take them out at night, they're gone, right? Like, I'm usually never able to go on one until maybe later, and that's when they take them all off the streets. So yeah. I haven't gotten to ride one. Have you ridden one before?
I did.
Okay.
Just for
sounds
about
like it
15
went
minutes.
Great. Yeah. You know, I think that where the city is open to working to thoughtfully create such a resource for people, I'm very game to have that conversation, right? My understanding is the company kind of rolled up and dropped a bunch of these devices out there and didn't necessarily want to engage in a process toward doing that collaboratively. So I can understand folks' irritation with that. But I just as a person, I want to be able to ride a scooter. I think that would be a good way to eliminate a lot of smaller trips. Like, this gets back to something I think about with respect to our ward, is that a lot of people take, like, 5-minute car rides to get to a lot of different places because we haven't connected our neighborhoods well enough through different trails, through different ways to get there on foot, through bike lanes, right? And so I would like to do more to kind of fill in the connectedness of our communities now that we have a major... You know, I benefit from the Green Line. I benefit from this amazing billion-dollar infrastructure project. And there's great routes like the A Line. There's lots of good bus service kind of between our city and other places. And I would like to now start filling in the gaps of getting to different parts of our city on foot, on bike, in other ways within the city. Does that make sense? Like, I would like to strengthen bus service within the city, be an advocate to Metro Transit, to the Met Council, to the state legislature for funding for that type of transit. The city does, you know, have a lot of oversight of street design and individual filling out the citywide bike plan. These are all things that, you know, need dedicated funding to take on. So I would just love to grow the number of ways people can get around.
Yeah, the funding question in particular is a challenge for the city of St. Paul, I think, about how to pay for any of the big dreams and ideals that we have in place. I guess that's a challenge for lots of different ways and parts of the budget for the city.
Yeah, well, and I think that very understandably, a lot of times the improvements that we make to our streets or to create more infrastructure for different types of modes of getting around They're coming at times where we're sort of doing existing road repair, like we'll tear up a road to make some repairs and then we'll do new paint and things like that over it. And so there are other projects that are really worthy of attention, but they don't necessarily get the priority because we're understandably, right, focusing limited resources on active things that are already, we're sort of doing 2-for-1 projects, and that makes
exactly
sense.
That's exactly right.
And I think that that's, I understand that focus, and I also would like to push at the city level for more dedicated funding to some of the smaller scale projects that community has pushed for too. There's lots of community partners that have been really on the vanguard and the forefront of block by block advocating for where they see places to make our bike infrastructure and our roads and our streets even friendlier, and I would really like to really work closely with them on that and just help amplify their voice on the council. I think that we need to be willing to see a lot of those projects as proactive investments, right? Not something that's a nice to have, but that actually just helps make it better overall for, I think, of lots of families with young kids who are just, there's so many streets they're terrified to cross. Seniors or people who are wheelchair users, it's really hard out there. There's a person who is one of the kind of core team members of my campaign who is a wheelchair user, younger woman of color, student. She lives in public housing. She lives in Seal High Rise, which is
right up
my
the street
polling
here.
It's where I go to vote, right? It's a polling place, and also a great example of, right, like publicly subsidized affordable housing, especially for people with people living with disabilities and additional mobility challenges. And she has told me a lot of times about when it blizzards, when it snows in our city, she has to make the choice between braving the extreme conditions to just get out the door in her wheelchair and get all the way to class. She's attending school, you know, down a few train stops away, or staying there to be safer, to be physically safer, and not deal with the impossibleness of navigating inches and inches of snow that have dumped on our sidewalks, but then essentially failing out of school. I mean, that's kind of the choice that she's forced into. And when we don't think about equity with regard to our streets and just these sort of mundane things that the city does look out for, right, like snow removal, plows, keeping our sidewalks clear, keeping our sidewalks navigable for everyone, thinking about people who use different ways of getting around, it really does have a bearing on people's everyday lives. And so that's the type of story I hold in my mind when I think about this stuff, right? Does that make sense? I just think it's, yeah. I think that it's something that I have a lot of interest in as a potential council person because it helps us be more connected to each other. And it's a way to combat a lot of the isolation that I think people are really feeling. It's a way to make our neighborhoods more integrated, more connected. That's just how you get a stronger community.
So you've been door knocking, I guess, I would assume, and walking the streets of Ward 4 a great deal.
So
and,
much.
Yeah, you've probably seen a lot about the fine-grained design details of the streets in St. Paul. How's that going, and what do people tell you, and what are you working on next? So you're probably only a month away from the campaign.
Yeah, we're 29 days to go. So I hear a lot from families about intersections near them that they are just really afraid for their kids to go by. There's a lot of quieter streets where there's homes and families with kids who can play, and but their kids know, like the parents tell me, their kids know this is where you can play and this is where you can't play, right? And they tell them you can't go play down this road. It's way too dangerous. It's really scary. And I remember being a kid. I remember just doing whatever I wanted as a kid and like getting excited and running away from where I was supposed to. You know what I mean? Like, I both understand the parents' point of view, and then I know what it's like to be a kid and want to just go where you go. And so I think that that's the type of thing that gives parents anxiety, right? Is what if I'm just turning my back one day and watering my flowers, and then my kid like scoots out into the intersection and something horrible happens? And so I do think, for me, I believe the users of our streets are the ones who know the most about what it's like, right? What the experience is like to be walking them and trying to live everyday life in your neighborhood with them. And so I guess I just am trying to say I'm very actively listening to people about what that looks like in every neighborhood. Where do they see a need for improvements? I think that if we're trying to go at this by saying, well, one person is going to be the master knower of where all the improvements need to be, and we're going to have a top-down process. That I just, you know, what I really see a need for is some ground-up collaboration and being willing to build on the ground-up collaboration that's already happening to keep on improving streets across our city. So that's what I'm interested to do. This comes back to having an organizing background and just being willing to be the kind of person who's going to just walk the streets and talk to people and ask them what they think and be very open and accessible to people. And I would really like to be that kind of a leader for our ward. And I also hear about just... We have a lot of major business corridors across the ward. So we have Marshall, Snelling, University. Like, these are all kind of major thoroughfares through our community that have tons of small businesses, tons of blighted properties or abandoned properties or things that are waiting to be turned into something else. And I think those are opportunities to really grow our tax base, create some smart new investments, come up with exciting new things that make people want to live here, make people feel like they're part of an original neighborhood, and that have bike infrastructure, that have places for people to get to on foot, that have dedicated, I'm willing to even look at places where it makes sense to put in parking meters or something that kind of helps fuel the turnover so that businesses can get some more foot traffic, more come and go of cars. It helps more customers be there, right? So these things are connected. The way that we design our community with respect to transit connects to then our economic future, the kind of housing we're trying to put in there. These are all the complex questions that a city council person has to think about. So it's good to hear about it as we talk to folks on the doors. People are excited about someone with a lot of new energy coming in, and I've been really grateful to just have positive responses from people. I've shown up on lots of people's doorsteps. I've talked to thousands of voters. And what I see is a lot of folks who are hungry for just this next chapter of what our city story is, right? We're in a moment where we need to be figuring out how to grow our city for the future of our community. And I am running to try to be that voice and that person who is open, who's listening, who is newer to our city and is actually trying to bring that perspective to the council, right? Who reflects the growth that we are seeing as a community. And because I am, because I'm a lifelong Minnesotan, but also a person who's proud to call St. Paul home now, it means I am active and listening to everybody, because I believe we need a coalition of people who reflect all the lived experiences of our ward, not just one group of people, not just one, you know, regular usual suspects group, that is going to be willing to put their time and energy and passions towards just the project of making our community better. So that's big picture kind of doors right now, and we'll just keep on doing this work. We're going to go all the way to the election day. We've just been working extremely hard. So yeah, it's been really fun.
Great.
Yep.
Well, thanks for taking the time out of your busy schedule to talk to me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
The election is what day again?
August 14th.
Well, good luck between now and then.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Streets MN podcast. If you are interested in joining a conversation about Minnesota's transportation and land use, direct your browser to streets.mn. Content for Streets MN is volunteer-driven, and the views reflected on